Hi, Steve Cooper, and this is just a quick intro into my next podcast, which relates to His Majesty's Inspector of Constabulary and Fire and Rescue Services State of Policing Report. So that's the annual assessment of policing in England and Wales from 2022. It's recently been published, and the Chief HMIC is Andy Cook, QPM DL, and he's put together comprehensive report that captures the zeitgeist of policing, a snapshot of policing in England and Wales, and it covers lots of things around the police not getting the basics right, the police aren't always focusing on issues that matter to the public, and so also some issues around governance, leadership and workforce reform, so selecting and supporting the right leaders. So the whole idea with this is there's, and the reason why I think thought about putting this podcast together is because, you know, if you are aspiring to promotion, it's a really good document for you to read. I appreciate you may not always be able to get a chance to read it, so I thought I'd just do a kind of verbal record of it for you, so that if you're driving into work or you're commuting or you haven't got time to read it just now, you can play it on your way in or have a listen on your earphones and just get to thinking around it, having a look at it and see what value it can be to support you as an aspiring leader. Okay, I hope you enjoy it, and I look forward to doing another podcast in due course. Hi, Steve Cooper, Rank Success, and welcome to another Rank Success podcast. And today's podcast is around the state of policing. Annual Assessment of Policing in England and Wales 2022 report, and this is a report carried out by His Majesty's Inspector of Constabulary and Fire and Rescue Services, and the author of the report is Andy Cook, QPM DL, who is His Majesty's Chief Inspector of Constabulary. And this is a report that, as it says on the front, summarises and alludes to the state of policing, so a snapshot of policing in England and Wales for a year, and up to now it has been a useful read. It was previously authored by previous HMICs, and the reason I've decided to do this today is because, one, it's an important read for you if you are a promotion candidate, and those of you that have come across my YouTube channel or my blogs on my podcasts will be aware that I have summarised previous Peel reports, so those are HMIC, Her Majesty's Inspector of Constabulary reports, which are done thematically or in relation bespoke to individual forces, and Peel stands for Police Effectiveness, Efficiency and Legitimacy, and the reports are carried out under those pillars, if you like, or those areas, and they come up with and make recommendations. They identify areas for improvement or areas of concern, and as a promotion candidate, as someone who's aspiring to promotion, whatever kind of rank you're going for, these are important documents as part of your background reading, your wider reading, to brief yourself, to raise your awareness, and incrementally what happens there is it also boosts your confidence, because if you're aware of what's going on nationally in policing, what some of the challenges are outside your force, those things are particularly important, particularly if you're going for inspector, where you need to demonstrate more of a strategic awareness of what's happening, and you'll get questions and tests in selection processes accordingly. So this is a helpful report. It is one which is done anyway by HMIC, and they report to Parliament on this, but it's a great snapshot for you to read. I'd go so far to say as you will be significantly disadvantaged as a candidate if you don't read it, if you don't know anything about what it's talking about. So I quite liked it. I'm going to go through it. I'm not going to cover everything, because you can download it straight away. I've shared it on my Twitter account, and you can find it at HMIC website or the Peel website. And you can download it yourself and have a look at it. You'll know that I've written blogs on reading. Every leader is a reader, Not necessarily every reader is a leader, but the point there being is, you know, I know you're busy, you will be busy as a cop today, and this report, this State of Policing report, alludes to that in lots of different ways. But in terms of your own CPD, in terms of your own development, you must really consider reading through some relevant material to help you kind of rise above the, let's just say, one dimensional aspect of showing up for a promotion selection process. It's much better to go and you know, be have prepared to a depth and breadth of preparation. And I'd encourage you to do that to a point you've never done before in your life. Why? Because it makes it a much more user-friendly experience. It's not so daunting to go for a promotion selection process. If you've done the work beforehand, effectively it should be a professional conversation between you and a panel of professionals. So if you're going in there to a promotion selection process and you are daunted because you haven't done the work, those two things are related, if you like, because most promotion panels will try their best to put you at ease when you're in there, but you have to have done the work beforehand to kind of hold your own in there. So in relation to this then, this week the government have just announced a 7% pay increase for public sector as well for the police. So whilst it's probably not as much as people were expecting, it is a welcome boost given the cost of living crisis, if you like, at the moment. So a little bit of good news there to blend in with some of the things I'm going to cover. I'm not going to cover everything, as I say, because you can do it, but what I would like to do is just have a hop, skip and a jump through it verbally, so that you can listen to this as a resource while you're commuting into work, as many people tell me they do, and you can have a think about it, because that's what it's all about, is getting you to think. I'm not looking to teach you anything. You can read this report for yourself and pick up the insights that you wish to. I just wanted to go through a couple of aspects, if it's helpful, to cover the promotion side of it. Okay, so first thing I'll say, it's a really good, I would say a must read for aspiring promotion candidates. It's a great overview and briefing aid to your thinking. It covers the good, the bad and the ugly in policing at the moment in one document, and it's not a particularly long document. And in that respect, it captures the zeitgeist, if you like, the current thinking, the current situation or state as things are at the moment. And there is a hint of optimism in it, although it covers some areas for improvement, and Andy Cook uses the term, you know, policing isn't broken beyond repair, but you get the idea from that comment that it is in a bit of a state, shall we say, to align to the document's title. So there is a hint of optimism. Andy Cook does still allude to some sense of optimism through here, and there's a definite edge that with the right political appetite and actions by chief officers and a bit more coordination, and no doubt obviously a bit more money, but that's probably not going to happen, more efficiency, then we can move to a better place, and hopefully you can record some improvements next year. So the areas in which he went through that are summarised, if you like, in the contents or the forward, the broad areas are that the police aren't always focusing on the issues that matter most to the public. Well, ding ding, switch on if you're a promotion candidate. What does that mean to you? I'll go through some of the subtitles in a minute, or the subheadings, and you can pick out the bones that you wish to. So the first one is the police aren't always focusing on the issues that matter most to the public. The second one is the police aren't always getting the basics right. And the third bit is around governance and leadership and workforce reform. So those are the broad areas of the report. So under the first one, the police aren't always focusing on the issues that matter most to the public. There is public perception and victim experience of the police, factors affecting police performance, the role of the police needs to be more tightly defined, and the police need to carefully balance their priorities, and efficiency needs to be improved. So under the next heading, the police aren't always getting the basics right, In our peel inspections, responding to the public and investigating crime are still the worst performing areas. And I'll come back to that in a bit. Effective neighbourhood policing is vital for prevention. Stop and search is an essential tool that needs to be better understood. And the police don't collect and analyse data well enough. So that's under that heading. And the third heading, governance, leadership and workforce reform. A modern governance structure for a modern service is what's alluded to. Selecting and supporting the right leaders. Standards and culture must improve. And dismissing corrupt and incompetent officers. And the last one, recruiting the right people and keeping them in the service. So that's a kind of overview of what the content of the State of Policing, the Annual Assessment of Policing in England and Wales, covers. And if you're a cynic and you're reading through this, depending on what angle you're coming from, you could, forgive my French, you just go, no shit, Sherlock. You know, this is highlighting stuff that's well known to people. And, you know, there are no great big surprises in there. The point being is it serves a real good purpose, a really helpful, useful purpose for you, particularly as a promotion candidate, and no doubt for, you know, the people that this report is intended for in Parliament and people interested in policing. It captures, as I said earlier on, the zeitgeist, if you like, of what the situation is now, so that from their different perspectives, action, which is what is alluded to here, can be taken. And certainly it can help structure and support people's thinking, including yours as a promotion candidate, aspiring promotion candidate. But one of the things that, one of the quotes that I quite liked was, so John Sutherland, police commander, has his own blog. I know he's now a retired police officer and a respected best-selling author, but if you weren't aware, as a promotion candidate, his blog is quite wonderful, really, in terms of content for you as a promotion candidate, certainly to support your thinking, certainly in relation to identifying the issues and the challenges, particularly facing the Met, but also more broadly policing. So I would commend you to read that blog. I often refer people to that blog because it is so good. There's so much content in there to help you structure some thinking and to kind of take a tack. So I often say, you know, in your journey for promotion, you're preparing, you know, you sometimes have to, a bit like sailing, you know, tack with the wind. The wind's not always blowing in your direction, so you haven't always got all the right information. But those blogs like that help you with snippets and gusts of information so you can tack in the right direction in your own approach, bespoke to how you wish to prepare for promotion. But I quite like to blog. There's a blog that he's got there called The Impossible Job, and it alludes to the Met Commissioner's job, and at the time it was Cressida Dick, but it alludes to the actual job description, and in it he outlines the significant, the massive challenges facing the Met, and he lists them. And this is the quote that I quite like. He encourages readers and observers and thinkers to think more widely about the context that all of this is taking place. It's a context created by politicians who have broken the legs of policing and left the rest of us to wonder why it is no longer able to run. So I quite like that because it sets the scene for reports like this so that you can be informed, you can have a broad view. I quite like that as an overview thought, that, you know, the legs of the police service have been broken by politicians, particularly over the last decade. And, you know, we're all wondering why it can't run. So the likes of HMIC are having to put together reports like this to record the situation and to fulfil their responsibilities to keep, you know, abreast of developments in policing, good and bad. So I quite like this for that reason. You might read the report and some of the comments around the lack of coordination between senior police leaders, chief constables, and the mechanisms to support them, and the complexity around their decision making, with the resources that they have, and the issues and challenges to be more effective and efficient, which is the short job description of a chief constable, to deliver an effective and efficient police force. But you might argue at the other end that the government have broken one leg of the police service, and, you know, the collective failings of senior officers have broken the other one. Just a thought, just an analogy, if you like. And that was some of my early thoughts when I was reading through it. But the point I come back to here is, this is a great report for you to read as an aspiring promotion candidate. I find that officers don't read information enough. They don't read the right reports, and this is manna from heaven for you to read before you are, or if you're listening to this now, or you aspire or intend to go for promotion now, maybe you've qualified this year, and you know, this is something you can put in the bank. Take this one to the bank, bank it, save it, and read it, because it's so full of great insights for you and overviews. And this report was also a topic or subject of a recent WeCops debate. So this is a Twitter debate, hashtag WeCops, and it was last Wednesday, where there are a number of questions asked around this report to try and generate more ideas for going forward, perhaps towards next year. So how can policing rebuild trust and confidence with the public? Well, you know, there's lots of thinking around that as one question. It's a great way of absorbing new ideas and new thinking, which is no doubt why it was asked. And I suppose in that respect, I quite like the fact that this report, at least very briefly, alludes to a Royal Commission. And in that case, you know, that's the proper job. That's the way of getting this done, arguably, I suppose, is to do it once and to do it properly. But generally, people say that takes too long. But what it would do is it would involve everyone involved in policing. It would take account of all perspectives and budgets and the role of policing going forward. And for me, I think, although the political appetite's clearly not there for that, even though it's alluded to and suggested in these and other documents, I don't think the political appetite's there. They can get away with not doing it. They'll get away with not doing it. You may argue there's money for lots of other things, but not for a Royal Commission. And if it was that important, and some of the stuff alluded to in Andy Cook's report is clearly very, very important. But he says that, you know, the service is not broken yet, beyond repair. What does that mean? Does that mean that we have to wait till it gets somewhere nearer to that before we do it properly? As I say, we live in a VUCA world, a volatile, uncertain, complex and ambiguous world, and you know, we're just whispering in amongst it with our own thoughts. But I quite like the brief alluding to a Royal Commission, because I think it would allow the service to reset, to rechip and to recalibrate for the expectations of the 21st century. So that's what I thought that question for me meant, is, you know, how can policing rebuild the trust and confidence with the public? Well, do the job properly. Let's have a look, involve the public in something. Our Royal Commission would be brilliant, because it's a bit like resetting and rechipping and recalibrating again, you know, pushing the start button again for a new century. You know, as I say, when you read through some of this, the police aren't always getting the basics right, in light of all the funding challenges, etc., etc., and the fact that over the last 10 years, you know, 40,000 officers and staff have been removed, if you like, from policing under austerity measures. You know, you can read through some of this and go, you know, the need to drive up investigation standards, the police aren't always getting the basics right. And as I say, it's not particularly, you know, brilliant saying, but you know, you all know what I mean when I say no shit Sherlock. You read through this and you go, okay, so you're describing what everybody knows here, but it has to be done, and it's done very well in this report. It's pulled together, so you know, one of the issues I just alluded to very quickly there was driving up investigation standards. It sounds a bit like a scratched record. As an officer myself, I finished in 2014 in the police service. And for as long as I can remember, from when I was a constable, driving up standards of investigation has always been there. And if you think about it, it should be there, because the effective investigation of crime is a driver of public confidence. And, you know, it's linked to victims, and all of that is covered in this report. But some of the conclusions, some of the observations are things that you probably already know, but as a promotion candidate, it's about, you know, refreshing, and if you like, rethinking through some of those things so that you're informed and confident to be able to engage with a promotion selection process. So this report goes through, you know, adequate resources, skills and experience, team approaches with the CPS and the criminal justice system, and lots of other things. But I'm just going to kind of touch very quickly on a kind of serious language that's in the introduction. And clearly Andy Cook, he alludes to his own experience here over 3 decades plus in public service. He's under no illusion about the enormous pressures that frontline officers and staff are operating under, and nor does he doubt their dedication. However, and that's what you'll find with Peel reports a lot, is the language in the way they're written is, here's a, you know, really good thing that the A force is doing, but, and that's where there's a knack to reading Peel reports if you're a promotion candidate. Have a look at them. If they've identified good work, things that are very good, well, that's a nice to know. Take it, bank it, you know, absorb it, brilliant. But what you're actually looking for with these reports, certainly with your force Peel report, is, you know, areas highlighted for improvement, and generally they lead into those with that, you're doing this very well, but, or you're doing that very well, however, and those are the words. And it's literally worth you reading through a Peel report with a highlighter pen and literally highlight those words, but or however, as well as the areas that are clearly marked areas for improvement, because that's what you are looking for. You're looking for the areas where your force are not doing well, or where they could do better, so that you can tell the board, particularly perhaps in forward-facing questions, how will you deal with this, or, you know, what will you do in this situation, what will your priorities be as a newly promoted leader. You've at least got some ammunition, if you like, in your head to be verbally proactive in your own interests as a result of having read through these reports. So have a look at the areas for improvement, because that's essentially how you're going to help the force, and areas of concern as well. And that's the value, I think, in Peel reports, as well as giving you a great brief and overview as part of your background reading. So Andy Cook alludes here to, however, the police are experiencing one of the biggest crises in living memory. I can't recall a time when the relationship between the police and the public was more strained than it is now. The public's trust and confidence are unacceptably low, and the fundamental principle of policing by consent, upon which the service is built, is at risk. Significant reductions in trust and confidence have been recorded. He goes on to say these conditions make it less attractive for the police, for people to stay in the service, let alone join it in the first place. And he goes on to allude to some of the expectations, some of the reasons why that trust and confidence is at a low point. But it's almost apocalyptic kind of language there, isn't it? So as a promotion candidate, pick up on that. What does that mean to you? You may need to go away and have a think about that. Perhaps you know, write it out, perhaps try and find some links, have a look at what the situation is in your force, what's the perspective there, and what's being done about it to deal with priorities. What keeps the chief and the senior leaders or commanding, what are their priorities, what's on the risk register as medium and high, do you have any oversight of that, particularly as an inspector? And just give that some thought, because you need to make it contextual to your force. This is an overview nationally, but there will be links. All policing is local, so there will be local links. He goes on here in the introduction to say, you know, the truth of all of this is far more complicated. The police service is a complex system operating within an even more complex criminal justice system, and there are widespread systemic failings in both. Some of these account for the present state of policing, and in broad terms they are that the police aren't always focusing on the issues that matter most to the public, and charge rates are far too low. Second bullet point, the police and the wider criminal justice system aren't getting the basics right, as shown through the withdrawal from neighbourhood policing. And some critical elements of the police's leadership and workforce arrangements need substantial reform. And that's where he follows that up by saying, but the service isn't broken beyond repair. Undeniably, these failings will be extremely challenging to resolve, but they won't be fixed solely by issuing glossy strategies, mission statements, visions, concordats, or the like. They will be fixed through action. And the police service needs to focus on doing what matters most to benefit the communities they serve, and these actions need to be highly visible. Not only do they need to show that they're committed to taking action today, tomorrow, and next week, but also that they will act in the long term too. So, you know, again, just coming to the end of that, I think about Sir Robert Mark's statement. Sir Robert Mark's a former commissioner in the Metropolitan Police, and it is a well-known statement that he says that, or quote, that the police are the anvil upon which society beats out the problems and abrasions of social inequality, racial prejudice, weak laws, and ineffective legislation. And I think that still stands the test of time. It's still a kind of measure that, you know, things that are happening in society, you know, generally it's the police being battered, literally. I mean, you consider the amount of assaults that are going on, increasing assaults on police, and the breakdown of public respect for policing, and those increased assaults, you know, the police are literally being battered on that anvil. And I think, you know, that's another quote that perhaps you could have in mind when you read through this State of Policing report. So, you know, I'm just going to have a bit of a hop, skip and a jump now through it, just to say that the first next part is the police aren't always focusing on the issues that matter the most to the public. And just coming back to a couple of those issues there, around, you know, the withdrawal from neighbourhood policing. Well, you know, constables haven't done that. That's been done as a result of decisions at much higher level than them. They go out and do the best they can. Constables, sergeants, inspectors go out and do the best they can at the coalface, if you like, engaging with the public, delivering the service, trying to build that trust and confidence and engagement every day. But they are acting under policies and guidance and direction of decisions that are made above them, with all the complexity around those that happen. But chief constables are there to make those decisions around the use of resources. And you look at it and you think, well, you know, the officers are doing their very best to get to deliver the service and focus on the issues that matter most to the public. But in terms of coordinating it, this report alludes to the fact that, quite simply, the police aren't keeping up. They can't keep up with it. And at best, people are being left dissatisfied or left at risk at worst. So, you know, to be fair, he alludes to a great extent empathising with the police because they have to contend with so many factors beyond their control, operating with limited resources and working within a criminal justice system that is increasingly strained and efficient. And here we go again. However, so this is that pattern I was talking about as you read through these documents. However, these factors, even when combined, don't sufficiently account for the marked decline in public confidence and satisfaction in policing. There are other powerful factors at play. And those are the kind of things I'd expect you to pick up on. There are other powerful factors at play. So what are they? What do they mean? And it really does then delve into what should be done to try and alleviate some of that. There's a focus here on public perception and victim experience, and victims being increasingly less satisfied. There's some statistical information there around that, and the fact that the victims commissioner found that fewer than half of respondents felt the police had treated them fairly and respectfully. Many felt that police hadn't taken their reports seriously or taken enough action, and only 43% of respondents said, on the basis of their previous experience with the criminal justice system, that they would report a crime again. And it's deeply concerning, is what the report says, that so many victims feel let down by the people who were meant to protect them and help bring offenders to justice. So under there, those are the main things for me. And you know, Andy Cook, the report alludes to, for example, forces don't always identify repeat or vulnerable victims who may need different types of response. Keep victims updated, assess victims' needs, and consult victims in the use of out-of-court disposals such as cautions and community resolutions. Well, I don't think they do always do that, and that says it there in black and white. I don't think that's because cops don't want to do that. I think, as he alludes to, there are other factors at play here, not least the fact that, you know, switching away from this, if you look at the response policing week, you know, there are some people who allude to response policing being broken, absolutely broken. So there was a good blog on Twitter by Chris Obbs at Obzy on Twitter, which alludes to some of the tweets through Response Policing Week to, you know, I suppose question its validity, shall we say, question the validity of Response Policing Week as anything that's supportive or meaningful. It is in some ways, but you know, every week is Response Policing Week is another way of looking at that. And you know, as this report has done it, you know, who's looking at it, who's filling the gaps in relation to it, why is it that cops, I mean, I've seen tweets go past me this week. I think there was one female officer who it's July now, who had asked for leave because she was under pressure and for family arrangements, family needs, and couldn't get any leave until November. So reality check there. And I'm sure there are lots of, well, I know there are lots of others because I've seen the tweets, and they've been, I think some of them have been harvested and put in blogs. So, you know, all is not well in relation to that. So sometimes it's a bit like a talking shop, I think. And maybe you might think that's what I'm doing now. But sometimes it can come across as a talking shop when in fact, you know, what's actually needed, as alluded to in this report, is action. You know, everybody knows what the problems are. Where's the action? And, you know, there you go back to the fact that sometimes, you know, with the best one in the world, chief officers are sometimes impotent to do anything beyond the level of resources and decisions that have been made. And the people that bear the brunt of that are on response. And there's a knock-on approach, no doubt, through servicing members of the public, delivery of service, and that resilience that you have to go out on patrol and do the job, feeling refreshed after shifts, and being able to rely upon colleagues with some spare capacity. And it, you know, and sometimes when you do get a chance to go for a coffee or something, you've got members of the public criticising that cops are having a coffee. So, you know, all is not light and bright, but this report pulls together some solutions and some of the explanations and some of the courses of action that need to be taken. So again, coming back to the fact that if you're someone who, despite and in spite of everything I've just said, is still focused on, you know, developing yourself, and to do that through either lateral or through the ranks in terms of promotion, this is the kind of thing that you need to be thinking through. And I wrote my own blog recently around the thin blue line, the controversy over the thin blue line patch. And have a look at that. It's on my site. But again, alluding to the critical thinking and some of the complexity around what appear to be simple decisions are not always simple decisions. And in this report, it alludes to some of the complexity around, you know, senior officers being able to make some decisions that would, on the face of it, appear to be simple. Okay, so I'm just going to move through this report now to factors affecting police performance. The reasons about rising demand are complex and not fully understood. Well, you know, there needs to be some work done around that then, doesn't there? It alludes very much to fraud and the fact that in the year ending September 2022, it's estimated there were 3.7 million fraud offences and 690,000 computer misuse offences, which represents nearly 50% of all crime. And that's why these reports are good. That's the kind of thing that you can kind of introduce in interview as part of your professional conversation. You know, well, look, I'm well aware that having read the recent State of Policing report that, you know, fraud represents nearly 50% of all crime. So again, what are you going to do about it? What do you think about that? What do you think should be done about it? What is being done about it? That's why these reports are good, because you can hold the space, stop, and if you like, journal or write down some of your thoughts, make some notes, scribble down some ideas around how it will serve you in a promotion selection process, certainly in an interview, maybe in a presentation or a briefing. It says that only a small proportion of those frauds were actually recorded by action fraud, and even fewer of them investigated by police, but it does represent an area of increasing demand for the police, and it isn't a problem that they'll be able to tackle alone. So that's that. There is also, it alludes to mental health crisis, and there's, I mean, you could almost do a completely separate blog around that. But everybody seems to be looking at what scope there is around not responding to mental health calls that are not life-threatening, that are not technically the police role. I know that up in Humberside, Chief Constable Lee Freeman, because I went up and interviewed him, and you can listen to the podcast interview with him, the Right Person, Right Care, Right Person initiative has been looked at by other forces. It's looked at by the Met, and you know, plans, actions, policies, strategies are in place to try and do that, because when it works well, it can alleviate a lot of strain and pressures on policing. But again, what's the scope around that? What's the picture around that in your force? What do you think about it? Because in this report, Andy Cook alludes to many of the chief constables who wrote to me commented on the rising complexity of offences investigated by their officers, and they make a valid point. And there's some stats there around counting rules and crime recording rules. There's a whole section there on resources, force management statements identifying good practice, but the quality of these statements varies considerably, and the police need to get better at specifying the demands they face. And that's interesting, because, you know, do you understand demand? If you're answering questions around performance, or you're trying to get an understanding of the situation for your force, you know, what is it? Do you know the answer to that now? What is demand? Is it demand that you did? Is it work? Is it hidden demand? Is it reactive demand? Is it proactive? You know, what are the areas of demand? Do you understand it yourself? Because it's all very well this saying that forces don't do it. Nobody will be interested in that in your promotion selection process. But if you can come up with ideas and thoughts and suggestions around this, at least show that you're well briefed and well aware of it, then the board are more likely to think that you're someone who's going to inject that energy and that application into helping the force get better and do better. There's a talk here around the police uplift program, recruiting 20,000. Yeah, managed to do it. But actually, to recruit the extra 20,000 whilst replacing leavers, the police had to recruit more than 46,000 additional officers. And then the resources required to recruit, train and supervise so many junior officers are substantial. And the sheer scale of recruitment has created a heightened risk that people unsuited to policing may join the service. And there's some evidence there that in our 2022 report, an inspection of vetting, misconduct and misogyny in the police service, we found examples of forces granting vetting clearances to substantial numbers of unsuitable applicants. I'll just read that again. We found examples of forces granting vetting clearances to substantial numbers of unsuitable applicants. Now, some of these vetting decisions may have been influenced by pressures on forces to meet certain recruitment targets. So it would appear that on that, we're almost, you know, the police are almost their own enemy on that, because, you know, vetting is expensive. It has to be done, but it can be targeted. There's a system to doing it. It has to be prioritised for recruiting and other areas, so when people move roles or posts, particularly where those posts have some vulnerability around them, then that's where you spend the money, that's where you do it, and you make sure that when people move from a particular post, particularly if there's any risk around it, to another post, either on promotion or laterally, that their opportunity to vet is done. But you have to, you know, you can't just have a free-for-all vetting budget unless the government provide more money on that. So, you know, chiefs and organisations have to deal with what they, but I talked about that a long time ago in relation to strategic risks to organisations a couple of years back, and you know, vetting was on the list there. It's a well-known problem, but you know, it's sometimes like chickens coming home to roost, or you know, problems and strategies and policies coming back to bite you on the bum. Okay, during the austerity years, forces had to reduce the number of experienced officers and staff at an alarming rate, meaning that many recruits didn't receive adequate supervision. And as a result, there's currently an increase in the inexperienced workforce. So again, you know, no shit, Sherlock, You know, people knew that, they know that, they knew that was a risk and a likelihood. But people who are in the job now, so if you're listening to this and you are one of those officers with under 5 years in, and as most people, I think it's about 38%, this report says, will by 2024 have less than 5 years in, or around 5 years service. You know, you may not know the history of policing, so just 5 years before that, before you joined, so within the last 10 years, this austerity years was about the alarming reduction of officers. And then what they call the, if you like, the uplift program, I call it the replacement program. It was just replacing all the officers that were saying, but if you look at the language used by politicians, etc., it's all about new officers. And not one of them are new. Yes, they're new to the organisation. Yes, they're new people. But those posts, those roles, those numbers, those available positions were ones that were done away with. So that's a reality check in relation to that. They do take a little slant here in relation to the uplift program has brought some benefits, including increased workforce diversity, something the service has struggled with for years. I allude to in some of my blogs, some of the forces are for promotion boards doing a half-hour interview on equality, diversity and inclusion before your main promotion board. So as a candidate, what do you know about that? And that's the kind of place where you stop at this report and go, okay, I remember Steve said something about he's done a series of blogs on that. I'd better read those just to raise my awareness when they talk about that. Because supervisors such as sergeants and inspectors play a vital role in setting standards and making sure their officers' work is of high quality. But balanced against that, the Peel report of 2021-22 in an inspection of the Metropolitan Police, HMIC found that inexperienced staff with limited practical experience were being managed by similarly inexperienced supervisors. So again, if you're going to be a supervisor and you aspire to be a supervisor, what's your CPD like now? Your continuous professional personal development plan, because once you are in role, in post, it's your responsibility to be the best supervisor, manager, leader you can to get the best out of your team and to manage them and their performance to the best of your ability. And that's about you being on your top game as well. So you can get questions all around this potentially asked on your promotion board. So if you want some of those example questions and to see them written out specifically in detail with evidence and guidance for those kind of questions, then I provide digital toolkits that you can download straight away at ranksuccess.co.uk, as well as lots of podcasts, free blogs and YouTube videos to point you in the right direction and to offer some guidance and direction. Okay, so that's that section really. There's comments all the way through that the CJS criminal justice system is still dysfunctional and defective, and it does a deep dive into that, or a deeper dive into that. And then the role of the police needs to be more tightly defined. And I think that's where I think the Royal Commission would come in. I don't think that's going to happen, but it's something, isn't it, that, you know, police should be part of, the public should be part of, the government should be part of. To answer that question alone, you could have a Royal Commission on it to come out with, you know, what the police will do, what they won't do, what the expectations of them are. But I think they will always boil down to the protection of life, property, and the prevention of crime. But, you know, all the Peelian principles, is it time to review some of them? They've lasted for a long time. Do you know what they are? Do you know how they link to the role that you're going for and the police service more generally from a perspective of a promotion candidate? So again, I've written a blog about those, the Peelian principles, on my blog. Have a look. Great refresh and links to some of this stuff. The police must have an honest and open discussion with the public, and through that honest and open discussion, definitively establish their role in society. So I'd like to see what's going to happen in relation to that, because that will be a big conversation, a broad conversation, a long one potentially. And then, of course, what comes out of that will need to be funded put into place. Okay. The police need to carefully balance their priorities. Okay, so coming back to this particular issue around priorities, where everything's a priority, nothing is a priority. And I know sometimes on policing, on operational duties, and when you're on response teams, when everything's a priority, you can think, well, we're lost now amongst all the priorities. But most public sector organisations, it says here, operate with insufficient resources to meet all the demands they face. And just on that one, so I'll just finish that sentence. The difficult but essential step for the police is to make informed choices about what to prioritise. And you may well get questions in relation to that on an interview, and quite rightly and quite fairly. You know, as you get promoted, the further up the ladder you go, the more control you have of resources, the more responsibility and accountability you have around the effective use of those resources. So as a sergeant inspector, chief inspector, you will have some degree of flexibility, power, autonomy over resources, and you'll be expected to use them effectively and efficiently. So what does that mean to you? It's certainly part of the role, allocating resources as a sergeant, allocating work, and monitoring the progress and quality of it is part of an inspector's role. So this is important in terms of balancing priorities and understanding resources. The environment in which the police operate doesn't make it easy for them. There's too many priorities, that's what this report says, and these can quickly change. And where there's too many priorities or frequently changing priorities, nothing becomes a priority. Chief Constables, so here's the bit about Chief Constables. Chief Constables are faced with a broad range of national, regional and local priorities which originate from many sources. To further complicate matters, what the public wants the police to do often doesn't align with some of the risks the local population faces. So that's an interesting one. To further complicate matters, what the public wants the police to do often doesn't align with some of the risks the local population faces. So what do you think about that? Chief Constables are expected to apply their operational independence and make informed judgments. Many of the Chief Constables who wrote to me said that making these decisions can be extremely difficult in practice. One example of that is fraud. So, you know, what resources should they be allocating to that? There's an argument in here later on for efficiency needs to be improved, strategic planning, organisational management and value for money in forces. And of the 43 forces in England and Wales, HMIC graded 5 as outstanding and 12 as good. And this represents just over 1/3 of forces, so there's clear room for improvement. And overall, HMIC issued 54 areas for improvement and raised 4 areas of concern in this area of efficiency. So specifically looking at how forces provided value for money and demonstrated continuous improvement. So again, just picking out off the top of that, you know, how do you believe that our force can provide value for money and demonstrate continuous improvement is a potential promotion question board, particularly for inspectors and chief inspectors. So that's why this report is good. And I think I'll probably draw it to a close in a minute here, but just to summarise at the end, the police aren't always getting the basics right, and that's something that you can think about as a candidate for promotion. There is a whole section in here on the end of selecting and supporting the right leaders. It focuses on senior leaders and, you know, those going for very senior positions, so chief officers. And the fact that there's a recommendation here that some things need to change that have previously been allowed to happen. So, but I don't think that will concern you listening to this, unless you're going for Chief Constable, in which case you'll definitely be reading this report and be aware of it. And there's some issues here around the structure of forces. Is 43 force structures in England and Wales right? The HMIC thinks it is for now. It's effective. But is it right for the future? I remember reading a speech by Bernard Hogan Howe, another former Metropolitan Police Commissioner, and I think he alluded to it, I think 9 forces rather than 43, and I think the Police Foundation have also alluded to, I think, 6 before. So clearly, you know, what do you think about that? What do you think about that, and why? And what do you think might work better? And I think, apart from that, that last section around governance, leadership and workforce reform, that about summarises it up. But I hope it's been useful for me. If you're driving your car, if you're commuting into work and you're listening to this, just to summarise, I think, you know, it's a report that's very helpful. It's broad ranging, it captures the zeitgeist of what's happening in policing at the moment. And if you're someone who's intending to go for promotion this year and you're travelling in on the train to work, or you are, you know, you've got spare 20 minutes and you want to sit down and have a quick flick through this with a pencil and a highlighter pen, I think you'll benefit from doing that. It'll certainly help support your thinking and provoke it and challenge it. And that's essentially what a promotion selection process is designed to do, so that people can have a look at it, have a look at you, and see whether you have that potential as a informed leader, manager and supervisor for your team. Okay, I will be back with another podcast in due course, and until then, take care and stay safe.